Right, I'm going to put it out there. There were a couple of mishaps when recording this episode. Firstly, it was recorded in a hotel room. You know, big production budgets these days. Now I'm joking. I was up in Scotland for a long weekend, and about 10 minutes in, the cleaning staff come in, so you can just ignore that bit. I also accidentally stopped recording too early, so it all finishes rather abruptly. However, those things aside, the glorious Lindsay, Con and I cover quite a few different topics in this. We kick off with a fair amount of exercise discussion, but I promise it isn't just us trying to rub each other's egos off, but it was more to set the scene for some of the darker and lighter motivations behind it, which we then get into. We also cover things such as feeling lost in our 20s, 10-day meditation retreats, fostering self-discipline, becoming a new father, and our top three life-changing books. Enjoy. Lindsay Con, welcome to the show. A very warm Scottish welcome. Due to popular demand, we've taken Howie and Powers on tour and we're recording live from beautiful sunny Glasgow. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Howie. Thank you for inviting me on the podcast. And it's not quite what I had in mind when you invited me back to your hotel room, but here we are. You never know where things can go.
This is just the warm-up.
Yeah, the warm-up.
Intros. Name? Where are you from? And if there was only... if you could only do one type of exercise for the rest of your life, what exercise would that be? Keep it clean.
So I am Lindsay. I'm from Glasgow, born and raised. And one exercise, I think, for the rest of my life would be... it's got to be running. Got to be. As much as I love getting in the gym, flinging some weights around, picking up heavy stuff, it's got to be running just for the mind.
Really?
You know, just when you get out there, like, and you're a few miles in, and then that runner's high starts to set in. Jeez.
Like, it's great stuff.
Just, it just kind of puts everything in perspective and brings that gratitude for life kind of at the forefront, rather than kind of sitting a little bit dormant in your mind. Because it's always sort of there, but you kind of need to be able to spark it and bring it to the forefront, and running just does that with ease.
You were into running, like distance running, before I feel a lot of people got into it. I think a lot of people got into it during lockdown when all the gyms were closed and lots of other types of exercise you couldn't do. But you were smashing out marathons well before then.
Yeah, baby. I mean, I don't like to talk about it, yes. So with running, I maybe got into that around 2015. And before that, I did absolutely no running at all. It was just into the gym, and that's all I did, with zero cardio. And then kind of a mixture of things got me into running, but I couldn't run for the life of myself. I couldn't run the length of myself. I was just so unfit, beyond belief. So when I started kind of running, it was maybe like a few hundred metres, and then I'd have to stop, take a break. A few hundred metres, stop, take a break. And then I eventually got up to about 5K. But I would stop halfway and then do the remainder of it. And then eventually I was able to do it in one go. And then after that, I had to prove to myself that it wasn't a fluke. So I had to do it all again, you know, just in one go, 5K. And then the next time you're trying to beat your time. And then next time, and then 5K just became what I loved doing. And I think that's what the furthest I ran for the first year and a half, was just 5Ks. I had absolutely zero interest in doing anything longer distance than that. I think what I liked about it the most was just, you could leave your house, walk out the front door, just run 2.5K, turn around, come back, And that would be, you know, walking out your door for your run and then walking back in within half an hour.
Workout done.
You know, and you smashed it. Great start to your day or a great end to your day. And it's all just, it's all done within the time it took me to watch an episode of Friends. You know, and that was it. I was like, this is brilliant. Why would I want to go any longer?
But you did. You did go longer.
Yeah.
What made you want to go longer? I suppose the natural transition, you go, the 10K is the next biggie after you kind of nailed down your 5K.
Yeah.
Did you go 10K and then just incrementally bigger until you're like marathon time?
No, so it was my girlfriend and now wife, Fiona. She got me into running. And then when I was hitting out with 5Ks, she was doing bigger distances, trying to get me to run longer. And then she did the Glasgow half marathon one year, and I went along and cheered her on. And then after that, everyone was like, oh, you got to do it next year. So, you know, I signed up, and then that was kind of it. Just started running those longer distances, and I kind of signed up, and I was like, had zero idea of what time I could do. So I was like, right, if I could do a sub 2 hour, that'll be immense. Like, because I only run 5K, so being able to run 13.1 miles, sub 2 would be
changing
phenomenal.
Between kilometres and miles is really going to confuse.
Yeah, I do that audience. A lot in They're my not, head. Not the just smarts, from but... like, because I'll like do my pace in kilometres, but like my distance in miles and things like that, like, it's just kind of warped in my mind for some reason.
For me, it's got to be kilometres because it just sounds more impressive. 42 kilometres just sounds better than 26 miles.
But I think for me, when you're running, like if you're 15 miles in, it doesn't sound like you've ran as much, so it sounds a bit easier.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, right, you've only got another 5 to go, or rather than saying, oh, 15 to go, 15 kilometres? No. But it was Fiona that got me into
big
the longer.
Big shout out to Fiona.
Absolutely.
Big fan of podcasts, I'm sure.
And so she smashed the half marathon. And then I signed up for it the next year. And instead of doing sub 2, you know, smashed that. And I did 1:39.
Fucking hell, your first
half marathon, 1:39.
That's unbelievable.
Just absolutely went for it.
Jesus.
And it was kind of that moment. Was like a big moment just in terms of mindset where you're like, look what I've been leaving on the table this entire time. You know, you just thought, oh, I don't want to do a long distance. I don't, you know, maybe a sub 2. And then you're just like going out and doing that on your first try. It's like, right, you've got so much more to give here. Not just in that, but just in
life. You're not like just a runner. I mean, that's a very impressive time, but you are also big time into your kind of weight training as well. So I know you're probably not going to like this, but let's just throw out some PBs here. Like what you're saying, like your squat and deadlift and bench press is ridiculous, considering you also do these longer distance runs.
Yeah.
Is your time to shine. And I'd add like 10% onto it as well, because no one's ever going to know.
Yeah.
300 kg deadlift.
Yeah, it's mad talking about that because it's just all relative. So it's just like what's good to me and what I'm aiming for, rather than, you know, you're talking about a runner's time, like 1:39 to some people is like goals. Other people, that's a warm up. You know, that's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's pretty slow, but for most people listening, you know, it sounds quite impressive.
Absolutely. So talking to you, it's like, I don't even want to really talk about the numbers.
But seriously, like this year, was it this year or end of last year, you were hitting out some ridiculous numbers? I mean, was it like 220 kg deadlift, genuinely? 150 kg, I'm making stuff up now, aren't I? But it was around that.
Yeah, it's in there. Yeah, just in the last year, you know, something like that, I was... You know, I've been working out for over 10 years, probably closer to 15 years. But my strength, it kind of got to a point and then just plateaued. And it's just sort of fluctuated, you know, just along that line. And I was like, these numbers aren't...
This is funny. Hang on. Sorry, do you mind coming back in, like, later on? Sorry?
We are finishing.
Okay, fine. Tomorrow's perfect. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Amazing.
So very impressive runner, lifter. What do you think drives you? And also, as a little addition to that, do you think that has changed and evolved over the years?
Yeah, it's definitely changed and evolved. I suppose it's just in a constant state of change, kind of what becomes important to you. So I joined the gym first day of uni, and it was just purely about, you know, looking bigger, looking good, you know. You see the Men's Health magazine, you just want to look like those guys, you aspire to have that sort of body image. So that's why you kind of begin working out. Just over time, it kind of just becomes a bit more personal and a bit more internal of just like, nah, it's just me against me. Mm. Like if I can do better than yesterday, better than last week, then that's what it becomes about. So over time, it just changes, it evolves. And now it's more just, I think it's just became something that I just have to do every day. Especially in the morning, it's that sacred time where it's your own time. In the morning when you get up early before work and you get to the gym or you go out a run. And that's just your time to focus and to go internal without any distractions. Without any emails coming in, without anyone bothering you. It's just your own time. And I think that's just such a sacred time, that first few hours in the morning. I just don't think I could ever change that now.
Do you notice a difference, like, in the afternoon or later on in the day, on days that you haven't worked out in the morning? Do you get more, like, I don't know, grumpy or agitated? Do you almost need that bit of exercise to kickstart your day?
Yeah, like, I kind of hate days where I don't work out.
Yeah.
Because I sort of just think about it all day, periodically, obviously, not just, like, constantly. But, like, yeah.
I can just see the dumbbells in your eyes right now. Like, get me downstairs.
But, yeah, totally. Like, if I don't, or if I miss a workout or something, I'm just thinking about it all day. And I think that's the good thing about doing it first thing in the morning, is it gets it done out of the way and you can get on with your day.
And what do you think about? Is it like, because I suppose there's a fine balance, isn't there, between a kind of it being a healthy part of a healthy balanced regime, but it almost becoming an obsessive thing that if you miss a workout, you're like beating yourself up all day, and every single time you like think about it or look past the mirror, you're just like, you lazy bastard. What kind of relationship do you have with that?
I think I've always been a little bit relaxed with it.
Really?
For the most part.
That's not what the listeners want to hear. We want to hear the dark, juicy stuff. That'll joke.
There has been those points where it's been intense, where you're like, this is, you know, the diet I'm going on, this is the workout program I'm going on, and there's zero tolerance for anything else within that. So if you're going out to eat, then you don't have what's on the menu. You have, you know, you nip to your car and get the Tupperware with the...
You've done that?
Yeah, I've done that. You know, someone gets the Domino's in, it's two for Tuesdays, and you don't have a slice, you know, those sorts of things. Because it's like, no, I'm dedicated to this thing right now. But it's been kind of few and far between over the years. I've always just kind of tried to be balanced with it. So if I'm going out, then I'm just out. If I'm going out to eat, then I just eat what I want, you know. And if we're getting pinty, then that's what we're doing too.
Yeah, I think we've discussed it before, haven't we, that we've potentially both gone kind of full end of the spectrum in terms of almost overly dedicated to certain areas of life. And then you realise, because sometimes that's what you hear, you're like your David Goggins and your Jocko Willinks preach, but you actually realise you don't take that much enjoyment out of life if you live that way. And maybe it's very different for different people, I'm sure. But there's something to be said for just doing things purely because you enjoy them. If you go to the pub for a few pints and not feeling guilty about it.
Yeah.
it's a very nice feeling.
Yeah, I think so. I think that first pint, sometimes you're like, oh, not really, but that doesn't last very long. Because I'm just in, like, if you've got a good group of friends that you're going out with, or your family, or things like that, like, that's my focus more than kind of anything, is just enjoying my time with them.
That's what you want to achieve from it, yeah. What's, just to stay on the exercise point a little bit longer, what have we got next for you from an exercise point of view, working towards anything?
Yeah, so still on strength training. Just now, I can't get past it. But I have signed up for the Edinburgh Marathon for next year.
Love it.
I did sign up for it this year, but 2 days after I signed up for it, I learned that my wife was pregnant and our son was due on the weekend of the marathon. So that got quickly patched. And I just kind of focused on strength training rather than going through the grueling marathon training. But I've signed up for it next year and kind of at the point now where I've not done any running for a long time. So I'm starting from scratch.
But so you made it, you made a really interesting point earlier, actually, in terms of when you got into running, the first few runs that you went on, you're literally talking about doing 100 metres, a couple of 100 metres, that's all you can do. Because I feel like that puts a lot of people off getting into running. They see people running like 10 kilometres, 20 kilometres, full marathon. And they're like, I will never, ever, ever get there. But it's almost realising that you don't just get there. You need to start with the going for a couple of 100 metres, a kilometre, working up towards a kilometre without stopping. Are you quite excited about almost starting again on that running front and going through those first humbling few runs and being like, oof?
Yeah, I think, you know, the first run back I did was like a mile and a half, something like that. So to try and get from there to where I need to be is like a long journey, a long path. Quite excited by it, you know. I've walked that path a few times now, and it's quite enjoyable, especially when you kind of see what you can do when you commit to something. You know, if you just go, right, this is what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to do it, and that's it, you know, and it's going to take me 9 months, 10 months, a year to get there, but that's...
You're unbelievable at that, and genuinely one of, if not the most like disciplined people that I know. Have you always been that way in terms of, here we go, we've got a goal and we're going to just work incrementally and consistently towards it? Or is that something that you've almost needed to foster over the years?
Yeah, I don't think I had that naturally at all.
No.
Again, it's kind of like you look back and you go, I wish I had that when I was like a teenager or in my 20s a little bit, like, but it's just something over time I had to learn and to hone and to develop. Was it's just step by step, day by day, brick by brick, you just build, and eventually you'll get to where you want to go. It's going to take time, but you have to develop the consistency, you have to develop discipline to be able to keep going even when you don't want to. And I think that's probably one of the biggest skills that I've developed, is just the ability to keep showing up even when I don't want to. I've kind of mastered that art of just keeping going, even if I feel like I don't want to that day, even if I'm tired, even if, you know, there's 1,000 excuses I could come up with, you know, I'll still turn up.
It's very inspiring watching you do that, but you do it in a very understated way as well. It's not like flashy, like, oh, me, I've, you know, you don't post on like Instagram your alarm at like 4:30 or 5 a.m. You just kind of do it without almost craving the external recognition for doing it.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Well, do you think I should start posting it all?
Start your own podcast, mate. It's great. You're not doing it. It shows that you're just doing it for yourself. You're not doing it for the external recognition. How did you develop that skill to be able to just turn up regardless of how you feel? Was it something that you learnt purely from seeing your life having not done that? Did you listen to it on a podcast? Did you read a book? How did you kind of make that change?
Yeah, sort of floating through life in my 20s, not really getting very far. And it's like something has to change. So you sort of dive into that personal development, self-improvement world. Just sort of reading books, and then you kind of find the next author, and then you find a podcast, and then you find a YouTube channel, and then there's just all these things sort of culminate, and then those hours of listening and reading and researching just sort of transform your brain a little bit. I think when you read a book or you listen to a podcast, it just opens up a slight other pathway in your mind to how you could think about life.
Not this podcast, but most good podcasts out there. But yeah.
Yeah.
And you said you weren't getting anywhere in life. How were you then feeling? Because obviously you can't have been feeling so great about yourself in order to kind of have that catalyst to change and to read those books. What were you doing then, and what kind of changed? Were you like, for example, I don't know, spending loads of time in the pub, video games, like how was your life looking? How were you feeling about yourself, and what kind of changed, I suppose?
Yeah, so I graduated uni, and then it just took an extremely long time to get a job in that field.
Did it?
It took maybe 3 or 4 years
before I
got a job in design. So in that time, I was working in shops and bars, in warehouses, working as a labourer, those sorts of things. So it was just, you know that's not really sustainable. So it was always like, right, what am I missing here? What's the problem? Like, if you're getting interviews, why are you not getting the job? So you're naturally just looking for the answer and trying to problem solve. And I think the one sort of video I came across that probably started me down a different path was an Alan Watts that he did. And it was called, What Would You Do If Money Was No Object?
Mm.
So it was talking about, what do you really desire in life, and what do you really want? Take away the money and the kind of functionality and all that out of it, you know, what do you really want? And most people would talk about a career in being creative, like a poet or an artist or a singer, or, you know, they just want to, you know, live on a farm and raise cattle and things like that and live off the land. You know, it's things like that. So it's like really trying to hone in on that. And that sort of took me off into that sort of self-development world, which was kind of quite obscure at the time, I think. There was like they were talking about like the vortex and all that, the law of attraction. Esther and Jerry Hicks, Asking It Is Given, that book. That was maybe one of the first ones I sort of read. And it just sort of, even if it's not sort of where you just go, right, this is the thing, it's sort of something that's changing your mind, changing the way you see the world and how you think about the world. And it kind of makes you realise that the way you see the world isn't the only way to see it.
Mm.
There's other ways. This is just your experience and the place you grew up and the people you grew up around. There's other ways of looking at the world. So let's go and find that out. And then you can start looking at, well, the smartest people alive have like written books from thousands of years ago, and you've just got it. You can go on Amazon and buy that book and read it. So you can read Plato, you can read Nietzsche, you can read Aristotle, and, you know, these sorts of things. And it's just mind opening for you. You know, when I was in that kind of closed off period of my life.
If you could now give your 10-year-ago self one book to read to change the course of their life, what book would that be?
The one book I would have to give to myself would be James Clear, Atomic Habits.
Mate, yeah.
It's ridiculous how, I think that was like a huge pivotal change when I got to that point, because I read that and then I read The Compound Effect.
Oh.
Pretty much at the same time. And that was around the time Goggins is coming out. And then, you know, you get his podcast with Joe Rogan, and then his book came out. And it was just like, you took that and then developing those habits, kind of changing your mindset, upping the ante of what you expect from life. And then that trajectory just seemed to just take off from there, you know?
I found the compound effect, even though it was a bit, it was a little bit American self-helpy times.
Yeah.
But if you could kind of take that with a pinch of salt, the core message of it is unbelievable. And it feels like knowing the impact of compounding is almost a bit of a cheat code for life. And it almost reinforces, to your point, what you were saying earlier about just turning up consistently each day, and over time you'll see those incremental improvements. I would put that as a top tier book as well. The James Clear Atomic Habits, unbelievable, because it was so easy to read as well and so actionable, super simple.
Yeah, that book was, if you read that, it doesn't matter what industry or business that you're in or what you're trying to achieve, it kind of just applies to every aspect of your life. You know, it's just habits, building, developing habits. So that's applicable to anyone and everyone. And a lot of the things, like, after a while, it sort of seems quite simple.
Yeah.
Like, same with, like, the compound effect. Like, after a while, it's like, well, yeah, like, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the time, it was, like, revolutionary when you've not been exposed to that sort of mindset.
And what would you say, it might be a difficult question, but the one thing that you did differently that had the biggest positive change on your life was?
So I think there was maybe a couple that really had quite a profound effect. The first one was the half marathon. In fact, that was the second one. The half marathon, when I did that time, it was like, look what you've been leaving on the table this entire... Look, you could have been smashing this whole time. Like, so then it was time to ramp it up from there, you know?
Yes, because that's applicable cross life. That's not just exercise. You're like, I can smash this exercise wise, but I can use the same principles to do the same from a professional point of view, a relationship point of view. It's the exact same ideas and philosophy, I suppose, that applies.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just game changing, really. Mm. But the other one was when I did a meditation retreat. It's called Vipassana meditation. It was a 10-day retreat down south somewhere, maybe in Gloucestershire or Hertfordshire, something like that. But it's this really intense 10-day retreat for meditation, and you go down and you take a vow of silence, a vow of noble silence, where
not just any type of silence.
No, noble silence, where it's not just about not speaking, it's about the silencing of the mind. So not only do you not speak, you don't communicate with any form, with anyone, like kind of eye contact or gesturing. You don't do any exercise, you don't do any running, you don't do any yoga, you don't read, you don't take notes. You can walk around the grounds, and that's about it. You get all your meals provided for you, they do all the cleaning for you, and the sole purpose of you being there is to meditate and to learn how to do this technique of meditation. So you get up at 4 a.m, you're waking up by this big gong sound, you know, proper style, and like, you know, from 4:30 your first session, and over the course of a day you're doing about 10 hours of meditation per day. So over 10 days you're doing nearly 100 hours of meditation, because you don't have these other distractions. And that, you know, by the end of that, I was like, look what you've accomplished in 10 days. I went from barely being able to sit for a couple minutes to being able to consistently sit for 1 hour without moving at all. So if you've got a scratch on your face, you know, a little itch, you don't scratch it at all. Back of your neck, your back's sore, you don't go, try and adjust. You just sit there, you observe the feeling of that, and you just watch it come and you watch it go, and you just sit there with it.
And how do you think that's helped your day-to-day life since then?
Well, I mean, you come at the end of that and you go, look, if you were to just dedicate yourself completely to one thing,
yeah,
which, you know, outside of that circumstance, you're not going to be able to do it that completely. But it kind of just shows you what you can do and what you can achieve in actually quite a short space of time. You know, it doesn't need to take 10 years. It doesn't need to take 5 years. It can be like, you can change your life in any aspect in a couple months. Just with a little bit of focus, a little bit of consistency and discipline to turn up when you can't really be bothered. And your life will change.
Would you, why did you do that? Noble Silence Retreat.
I think I was just searching for different ways of thinking. So that was really the time when I was reading a lot of like ancient Greek philosophy, kind of more modern philosophy, and trying to figure out like what my opinions are on things and of the world and my place in it. And this retreat just kept coming up. They have them all over the world. So if you listen to kind of bloggers and YouTubers, there's quite a few of them that had done it, and it kind of kept popping up. So I was like, I should check that out, and, you know, eventually signed up for it. But it was just about exploring a different way of thinking. And, you know, when you grow up in Glasgow or just outside Glasgow, you know, real small town thinking, right, and things like that, you know, you're just a product of your environment.
Yeah.
So you just think that way, and you think the way the people you grow up around think. And you just adopt that, and that's the way you think, and that's how you think the world, yeah, works. But it's not, it's just that really extremely narrow way of thinking. So I just kind of wanted to see what else was out there. And, you know, that's a never-ending thing, but you can kind of hone in on who you are within that world.
That's cool. Would you do it again?
I would love to do it again.
Would you, yeah.
But it's just the kind of time commitment. Like, you would need to take 2 weeks off work. And, you
know,
that's your annual leave.
If you said to Fiona, yeah, oh, yeah, just offer a 10-day meditation treat if you can look after Joey. You know, that'd be, yeah, great.
Yeah, yeah. The first time it was enough, having to take time away from people. But,
yeah,
you know, probably. But I would absolutely do it again. It was.
So that's interesting.
I think I would get, yeah, you would get something new from,
yeah,
it. Because if that was 2016, so, you know, all these years later, you've developed, you know.
I saw you trying to work out how many years later, and you're like, fuck that.
Yeah,
I can't even think.
Absolutely.
All those years later.
I don't want,
yeah,
to say a number.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm like, fuck, yeah, I'm talking about personal development, yeah, and I can't even,
yeah, think. 3 years later.
okay. 18 months later, yeah, I was like.
That's interesting that you did that, not to fill a specific void per se, but to more expand your mental horizons. That feels like quite it's a very mature thing to do, and almost unexpected. It's a very self-aware thing to do, because as you say, it's very easy when you've lived just in one place to almost have the blinkers on and be, I suppose, slightly narrow-minded in that way. Was that a natural byproduct of almost feeling a bit meh about life, a bit, I don't know if it was lost per se, but you were kind of saying that you weren't getting anywhere. Was that a natural byproduct of that, or did you feel like, as a person, you are inherently quite curious?
Yeah, I was definitely lost. Like, I had no direction in life, but I felt like that kind of elastic band that's like being pulled back and just won't release. It just had that like kinetic energy, just right, potential energy ready to go. But I just had no direction in what to do with it. So it was all just about exploring that. I think as well, I kind of started to have this awareness of just how negative the mindset is around. I don't know if it's like a Glasgow thing, a Scottish thing, a British thing, might be, but yeah, it just seemed to permeate my life, you know, and I could just hear it when I walked in a cafe, when I was on the bus or the train, or, you know, just anywhere in work. All the conversations were just so negative, and I just couldn't understand it, because I was starting to develop this extreme gratitude for life. It was like, why would you talk bad about it? Like, yeah, it's like, there's things up in that, but ultimately, what an experience this is just to be here. So I just couldn't understand like why there was so much negativity. So like for an example, I would walked into work one day and it was like this beautiful morning where the sun's rising. I think it'd been raining earlier and there was a rainbow just cast. And that was, you know, I used to live down by the Clyde at that point and you'd walk along there and it was just like, just phenomenal. You know, one of those days and it just energises you. And you just look at life and you just, oh, today's a day to do something great. Like, what an amazing life to live and how amazing this is to be here in this moment, in this time, in this country. And you're just thankful for it all. And you walk into work and you say to the person in the kitchen, what an amazing day it is. Like, look how beautiful it is outside. And then they say, yeah, but it's going to rain later.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah.
And you're like, you're literally raining on my...
You don't get it.
But I don't know if that's a cultural thing. I don't really have much to compare it against. But it feels like if you went into most, I don't know, professional environments or even social environments in the UK, and I don't want to like shit over the UK, I love living here, but said like, basically what you just said, oh, it's a beautiful morning, I was walking down the Clyde, there was a rainbow, I was feeling energised. People are like, fucking all right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, people, ah, oh, it's just not the thing.
No.
It's such just, a shame.
It really isn't. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
I'm going to listen to that back and be like, oh my God. Jeez, shut up, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like in an America, you go to an America.
Yeah.
It feels very, based on the few trips I've done over there, it feels very different. There's almost this positivity for life. And I know for a lot of people, it can seem this almost like annoying enthusiasm. But yeah, just, I don't know. I like it, man. I like that. I like that vibe. I like when people have this enthusiasm for life. It just, it gets me, energised.
But I suppose you need a little bit of that Glasgow energy just to ground you, take you down the peg and just like, be like, ah, it's
you
just
wanker. Yeah.
And then just be like, do you know what? It's not that serious. Like, we're just living, we'll just, you know, just enjoy it. That's it.
We've alluded to it a couple of times so far. Joey James Conn.
Yes, my newborn son.
What a lad.
What an absolute lad.
Congrats to you and Fiona, that's amazing.
Thanks, that's 8 weeks old now.
Huge.
So, yeah.
On the bulk.
Yeah, the supreme bulk. Trying to keep up with them.
How's life changed? I can imagine pretty drastically.
Yeah, complete shock to the system. But in like a good way, like it's very easy to talk about the, you know, when you're new parents, to talk about the sleep deprivation, which is, you know, it's there and it's tough and it drains you, it really does, but. You know, all that kind of just dissolves when he stops crying, he looks up at you, and you go, ah, I don't mind, like, you do you, like, I've got you. Yeah, so I just love him to bits, and it's just like a lovely wee bundle right now, and he's growing every day, changing every day. Just, can't wait to, it's that way where, like, you can't wait to grow up and see his personality and how he develops, but also you just want him to stay small so you can just carry him around and, you know, have him sleep on your chest and things like that. It's just, I'm just loving it right now.
Oh, that's amazing. You said something lovely earlier and I might embarrass you, but I'm gonna ask you to repeat it because I thought it was really nice about your little 6 a.m. TV shows that you like to watch with wee Joey.
Yeah, well, when you're up during the night with him, you know, and it's, it can be pitch black if it's during the night, and he's just kind of sitting in your arms after a feed, and sometimes he'll just be looking at you or sometimes he'll be sleeping and you just have this kind of really kind of powerful moment of being a parent and being a dad, and it's just such a beautiful feeling. And then I think at around 6 or 7 Cheers comes on the telly and when that theme tune comes on, Something about it just catches me, and I just like shed a tear, and it's just like such a nice moment just to have my son in my arms and just watching Cheers.
That's unbelievable. What's the theme tune again?
Where everybody knows your name.
Amazing.
But then at the end, they just play the instrumental part, and it's just like, it just gets me every time. Yeah.
What a moment.
Yeah.
There's going to be parents around the country cradling their 2-month-old kid watching Cheers after this. Talking of Joey, I feel bad having hijacked your complete day, and I feel like you might need to go back and see the wee man soon. So I feel that we should probably wrap this up soon.
Yeah.
I wanted to say thank you. Thank you for your inspirational outlook, not just attitude, but actual action towards life. I find it very inspiring, not just the way that you approach life, but you do it in a very understated, and I think also because of that, sometimes underappreciated way. It's amazingly positive, and it's had a massively positive impact on my life. And I do think that the group chat that you, me and Welshy, massive shout out to Welshy, the group chat that we have is just the most ridiculously positive thing ever. There's no like competing. It's just so supportive of one another. And I do think, yeah, it's a pleasure to be part of. So thank you.
No, thank you. And that chat is just like ridiculous because it is that support, and you can't wait to tell you guys something that's happened that's good in your life, because you know you're gonna just be so appreciative, and you know you're going to be supportive of it. So it's always nice to have that, something that happens good in your life, to be able to tell people that, you know.
It's nice because the thing is, I mean, it's human nature, right? But when someone tells you something that's quite impressive or that they're proud of, there's broadly two ways you can take it. There's the kind of optimistic, positive way where you're like, I love that, I'm really happy for you, and that's inspired me to go out and do whatever it is. Or, and this is unfortunately relatively common, there's a negative, cynical take where people almost take it as a negative reflection on themselves and their own life, and they actually become a little bit bitter and resentful towards you. And that's not the nicest of environments. So the fact that, mate, you boys are like so supportive about everything is great. And yeah, I would highly recommend people try as much as they can to surround themselves by such positive, encouraging people.
Yeah, it's definitely important in life to find that kind of circle, whether it's, you know, in person, online, WhatsApp, whatever. Just find that group, find those people that are your people, and you know, and then you take that and you build from it. Just enjoy it, you know. If that's all you can really do at the end of it, is just take a step back every now and again, have a wee laugh at it all, you know, be thankful. And
that's that abrupt ending I was telling you about, interrupted mid-flow, goodness me. But a huge thank you to Lindsay for coming on, a huge thank you to you guys for listening. And I will catch you next time.